and actually the end of our tour today. So hope you enjoyed it. And we're doing a lot more tours, a lot more virtual tours. These are just some of them. Or you can see all the details on my website, beatlesinlondon.com, and also, of course, on walks.com, London Walks website, walks.com. Also have loads of other walks on there, virtual tours as well, going from the likes of Dickens to Jack the Ripper and all over London and various locations in London as well. So lots more virtual tours coming up in the near future. Okay, so anyway, that's pretty much it. I hope you've if you'd like to unmute yourselves, you've got any questions you'd like to ask, or got any feedback you like to say, that would be great.
That was fascinating, Richard. Absolutely good. Fascinating.
Thank you. So hopefully we'll get back to Abbey Road soon. I said,
thank you very much. That was absolutely beautiful and very interesting. I really enjoyed it. Yes. Thanks a lot.
If you ever get a chance to go inside, often it's not possible, but occasionally they have these lectures done by two guys from Canada. And they do them like once every 2 years or so. You get a chance to actually go inside the studio. Well, actually, I might put it on there, but I went to it about 18 months ago. And during it, I went with my 11-year-old daughter, Lilia. And during the lecture, they asked if there's any piano players in the studio. And she's actually a very good piano player. And they had three pianos in the studio, and she volunteered. And she asked to go over to the piano, and she asked to play one chord.
Hi, Marta.
On the pianos. That was the final chord of A Day in a Life, using the same piano the Beatles used on the recording in 1967. Definitely a proud dad moment, that, I tell you. So she got a kick out of that as well, using the same piano the Beatles used on the recording in 1967. So that was a great thrill seeing that. So it's studio, it's got this real atmosphere. It is like going into a cathedral of music. It's any way I can put it. It's going to studio too. It's an amazing experience. There's so much history. I just touched on a very little bit of it on the tour today. There's so many other people if you ever go to, I've seen so many people on my tours going in and out of the studio. One person I've seen a lot recently is Nile Rodgers from Chic. Is that the creative director of the studio? You see him a lot there, so I never know who you might see going in and out the studio. So anyone got any questions, anything you'd like to ask me?
Remind me again of the date of the building, Richard.
The actual front part goes, it's about 1831, the original house was built. Oh. So it was 100 years old before they converted it to the studio. Now, I read somewhere the origin about the guy that was selling honours, that David Lloyd George lived there. So, Lord George, my father, Lloyd George. It was built as a house, and it was converted into apartments before the studio that was bought by EMI.
Has anybody done any fundamental legwork and looked at census returns and found out who was living in those houses, in the house? Has that work been done? Do you know?
Yes. Abbey Road did their own book a while ago, and there is quite a bit of information in there, I seem to remember. Right. Yes. Yes.
The about the crossing, do people make a mistake sometimes, Richard, and start walking along the other one?
Oh, they do. And in fact, you even see some taxi drivers taking people to the road. There's a crossing about 150 metres away down the road. You see people on the wrong crossing quite often, actually. Yeah. You see so often that, the crossing has moved. Well, I proved today it certainly hasn't. I said even English Heritage listed it. They said in their report they thought it had moved. I just had to look at the pictures. You can see clearly it hasn't. It has been relayed. Of course, it has been relayed quite a few times. It was relayed the asphalt. They've actually been there when the crossing disappeared, when they dug it up to put down the new asphalt. Yeah. And actually, people took chunks of the road, took chunks of the crossing as a souvenir.
Yeah, I think, you know, you were saying about the Talking Studio 2. I think I went to that one, and it's fantastic. I think the book's about £140, but it was so detailed. Yes. Incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I think what I really remember, do you remember when they said about the King's speeches, Mike?
Yes.
Absolutely incredible that they have microphones and, like you say, instruments in a cupboard that date back 100 years.
Yeah.
And they, because they made the King's Speech film, they said, what we really need is a sound, like a BBC sound from the wartime. And they said, oh, hang on a minute. And they brought the actual microphone of King George VI.
They got the sixth used. Yeah. It's still in the studio. Yeah.
Richard, do you... a couple questions. One,
sure.
How did they decide the sequence, the order in which the four of them walked across? And secondly, what about what they were wearing? Was that just casual, or was that, had that been pre-planned?
First, I think the order was by chance. Most of the three of the Beatles were wearing suits designed by a guy called Tommy Nutter, who was a tailor in Savile Row, just down the road where the Beatles had the Apple offices, number three.
Uh-huh.
And only George was wearing his own stuff. It was just, I mean, it wasn't like any design. It wasn't supposed to be Paul's funeral procession or anything like that. I mean, that whole Paul is dead thing, still at people to this day reckons the Beatles made the whole thing up. They didn't. It was completely and utterly made up by whoever.
Is there an explanation for the bare feet?
It was a hot day.
Huh.
So, yeah. I said he arrived in sandals. You can see he was uncomfortable. His footwear, he was uncomfortable in his sandals. He took them off for the last few shots and went across barefoot. That's it. It's a hot day.
Yeah.
Simple. But led to that rumour. I mean, you know, Beatles fans and around the world just latched onto that, didn't they, completely? Which has kept me in work for the last 30 years in a way. I mean, if it wasn't for the Paul is dead thing and that crossing becoming so famous, I wouldn't be doing this now, basically. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Beatles. But, I mean, that day, I mean, in August 2019, was people all over the world came. And people, guys from New Zealand, literally travelled to be there, just to be on the cross, to cross the crossing, 50 years of the minute since the Beatles. You can feel the love from all around the world. It was amazing. And it was absolutely special. Almost got arrested, but luckily the policeman was good in the end. But he was a bit frazzled, wasn't he, in that clip. That was a lovely day.
Deborah, has your family anything to, you know, because of the cabin, you know, any couple of stories you got?
Where do I start?
Yeah.
How long have you got?
My father was approached by a good friend of his, a lifelong friend of his called Joe Davey. And Joe Davey used to have Joe's Cafe in Duke Street in Liverpool, where all the groups used to go after their gigs for a meal early hours of the morning. It was open till 4 a.m. in the morning. And my dad and I included, we used to go there after we'd closed the club. And Joe approached Dad and said, I've got the chance of buying the cavern, Alf. You know, would you come in with me? Because Ray McFall had sadly gone bankrupt in the February of 1966. And this was the March 66 when Joe approached Dad. And he said, well, you know, leave it with me. He said, I can't afford to buy the lease on my own. And they knew each other, trusted each other to go partners in this new venture. And Dad came to me and said, I've got the chance of buying the cavern. What do you think? Well, you know, that was a no-brainer for me, because I'd been to the cavern since 1960, I'd seen the Beatles perform for the whole of their 292 performances. I was an absolute Beatles fanatic. So I said, look, Dad, you know, I think you should take it, not just because I'm fanatical about the cavern and the Beatles, but I also had a business head. And I said, I've seen it peak and I know it can do it again. And on that say-so from me. He went ahead with Joe and they bought the cabin. We got the keys on the 18th of April and did our quest of discovery. And then it took 3 months for it to be renovated, and we had to adhere to all the council's rules and regulations before we could open it. We had to put main drains in. There were no drains in the cavern, just a cesspit under the toilets. We had to put a brand new staircase in for access and egress. There was just that one narrow stone stairway going
down. Fire trap.
It was. And ventilation, of course, as we all know, with the condensation used to drip down the walls in the cavern, there was no air conditioning or ventilation of any sort. And so we did all that in 3 months, and the Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, came and reopened it for us on the 23rd of July, 1966.
Jeez, that's incredible. Can I ask you, did you see... the Beatles then when they were five with the I can't remember the face with the glasses. Were they completely so were they like a completely different band because of the edginess of the drums and everything? Because I think Klaus Voormann, I think it's him, who said he thought the Beatles were better in Hamburg with the five of them than what they ever were as a four piece.
Well, it's true that they...
I think it was Klaus Voormann, is that right?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was Klaus Voormann. He said that Hamburg turned the Beatles into from a professional outfit to the band of bands. And that's what he said. Because in Hamburg, they had to play for about 7 hours a night with just 10-minute breaks each hour. Yep. And it really made them into professional groups. And when they returned to Liverpool, they'd gone to Hamburg in the beginning in August 1960, and they came back in the December, and they had their first gig at Litherland Town Hall on the 27th of December 1960. Yeah. And that was the famous night where they joined forces with Jerry and the Pacemakers that night, and they all sang together. And people thought that they were a German group. Yeah. Because they'd learnt German while they were there. Well, Paul had, and I think John had a little bit of German. And then their first gig at the cavern was the 9th of February 1961, a lunchtime session. And the word had gone round Liverpool by then, you know, there's this fantastic group's been on Litherland Town Hall and they're coming to the cavern. So, of course, we were there ready to see who they were and, you know, what all the fuss was about. And my goodness, when they came to the cavern that day for their debut performance, they just exploded onto the stage. Their energy was absolutely palpable. And there were five of them. They had Stuart Sutcliffe with them. But Stuart Sutcliffe used to play with his back to the audience because he wasn't confident enough with his guitar. Mm-hmm. So he'd always have his back to the audience.
Yeah.
But Stuart Sutcliffe, it was only with them from the 20th of January 61 until the 23rd of March 61 when they returned to Hamburg for the second time. And that was the short period that Stuart Sutcliffe played at the cavern.
Yeah. And he tragically died from brain hemorrhage in April 1962. Yes. Just saying about the Beatles played at the cavern for the first time, February the 9th, 1961, exactly 3 years to the day later, they played on the Ed Sullivan Show, February the 9th, 64, 3 years to the day since they first played at the cavern, they were doing the Ed Sullivan Show.
That's right. There's a lot
amazing
of
coincidence. Yeah. There are. Yeah. Yes, there are. Very much so.
Yes.
I mean, the first picture taken of Ringo Starr and the Beatles was August the 22nd, 1962 at the Cavern. And the last picture taken was August the 22nd, 1969 at Tittenhurst Park, John Lennon's home. The last picture taken of the Beatles was taken exactly 7 years later of the four of them together. Exactly 7 years apart. So it's weird coincidences and dates and stuff as well.
Yes.
Yeah, there are.
Fascinating today. Thank you, Richard.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you for coming. And
thank you, Richard.
Back to your stories too, Deborah. Thank you. Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely to meet you all.
Yeah. Come again if you want to. We've got plenty more tours coming up. So have a look on the website, beatlesinlondon.com or walks.com. They're all on there. So David runs London Walks. So.
Okay.
Been my boss for the last 30 years. I hope I'm not fired.
Ah, that was great, Richard. It was great.
There's a new direction for you, David, isn't it? This virtual ball, so...
It is. It's.
I take it you probably wouldn't have gone down this road without the COVID thing.
I think that's right.
Here's a new enterprise, really.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah,
but you've got to get him in New York. I've been wanting to watch New York, some tours similar. I can't find a damn thing. It's just so good what you've got. It's brilliant. But
yeah,
get somebody over there and get some virtual tours for New York. I'd love to see some of those virtual tours of New York City. And there's nothing. Well, I can't find anything, you know.
Right.
Are you aware, Kevin, that we're going to be doing one in Rome and one in Venice?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I'm gonna watch it. Yeah, as soon as I saw it, I thought that's fantastic. So yeah, keep going. I love it. Love it. Really enjoying it. Thank you very much, David.
Get my friend Susan Ryan. My friend Susan Ryan. I'm doing my new book. I'm doing this book, The Beatles Fab Four Cities. Beatles. Liverpool, Hamburg, London and New York. She's doing the New York section. David Bedford, I know Deborah knows very well, is doing the Liverpool section, and we're doing Hamburg between us. And of course, I'm doing London. That's coming out in May. It should be out in May, I hope. Hopefully around the world. Just a company called ACC are doing that. So,
Richard, do you know the name of that? The Studio 2 tour thing?
Yes.
What the name of that book is or who the author was. I tried to locate it a couple of weeks ago. I can't find it.
Called Recording the Beatles. One of the guys called Brian Curhew. I can't remember the other guy who wrote it, but it's Recording the Beatles, it's called. Brilliant book.
How do you say his surname?
Curhew. That's K-E-R-H-E-W, I think it is.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm not sure it's still. I think they're trying to do a reprint, but the original, it was done as a very much a limited edition. It weighs a ton, that book.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
It's
the heaviest book I've ever.
Top five memories of my life that day in that studio. Just hair at the back of the head. Brilliant. Really unbelievable how they done that.
It's quite expensive to go to there. It's about £100 when they do it, but
I probably got it round the wrong way, but I remember something being about 100, 140. Maybe I'm talking about going in the day. Maybe the book's cheaper then.
It's a great experience just being inside the studio.
It was about the studio, the whole of the studio, and Glenn Miller and the soundtracks, and so I wasn't expecting that at all, and it was absolutely incredible chat talk. Amazing. But there we go, same as here. Thank you very much for tonight.
Thank you for coming, everyone, and see you again soon. And spread the word, please. If you got any comments, if you like to drop an email or something, you've got any drop a review or something, please do. And it was we're sending out questionnaires actually later. So we're doing some surveys to see how you look. This is kind of a new thing. So any comments, good or bad, please do. So you know, it's always good to know we're doing the right thing or the wrong thing and how to improve it. So thank you for coming today, and hopefully see you in London sometime would be great. So thanks a lot, everyone. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you, Richard. That was great.
Thanks, Richard.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.